Hello, I'm Fred Stella, president of the Interfaith Dialogue Association. Welcome to another edition of Common Threads. Last week, we began our conversation with Len Robinson. Len is someone who plays a significant role in both the Jewish community and in the interfaith community here in Grand Rapids. His resume includes the fact that he is the former president of Temple Emmanuel. He is also a member of Chabad House, an Orthodox community here in Grand Rapids. And he is the president of Jewish Theater Grand Rapids and also plays a very significant part in our Interfaith Dialogue Association Speakers Bureau. We send Len out to speak on virtually all things Jewish upon request. Len, welcome back.
Thank you.
Last week, we talked about a few things. We talked about assimilation. We talked about just the issues of being a congregation, you know, and that could be a congregation of virtually any religion. And we all have different challenges. One that you brought up last week is the fact, like, synagogue attendance.
Right.
There's not a tremendous amount of synagogue attendance.
Right.
You have more members who just pay their dues.
Right.
Then you do. Oh, by the way, when you talk about paying dues, do you use tithing at all?
No. In the Chabad, they do a little bit more in tithing than we do. Although you should have a certain portion of your check that goes toward charities.
Yes.
I know that, oh my gosh, about 15 years ago, United Way was going to have a benefactors, donors dinner, and they served, it was either on Yom Kippur or Rosh Hashanah, and they go, well, how many could it possibly be of our big donors? And it ended up being that they had to change the the date. So because part of what it is, it's called tzedakah. It's not charity.
Yes.
Charity means love. Tzedakah means righteousness. This is what a righteous person, the world wasn't made fair and balanced. That's our responsibility. And so, therefore, you give money not because you're some great person, but because this is how the world works better. So usually you have money called tzedakah box that you pop money into.
I'm glad you're telling me that. I always thought tzedakah meant number 10 with a bullet in 1962.
Yeah. Neil Tzedakah, that's where he got his name.
I figured that. So anyway, back to what I was talking about in terms just attendance.
Yeah.
Is that since Judaism is such a home-based religion, as opposed to synagogue-based, although you have services and all of that, but still. And there are some religions, particularly, say, Catholicism, Christian Orthodoxy, where it is just strongly stressed that you make it to service. And what's interesting about Catholicism, I don't know this about Orthodoxy, but I know in Catholicism, you could go to Mass 6 days a week, Monday through Saturday. If you skip Sunday, that's still a no-no.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
It is an observance of the Sabbath.
Of the Sabbath.
Okay. That's what does it. You can certainly go all the other days, but that's the one that it is of utmost importance. And so they have a bit of a carrot and stick approach. Some of my Catholic friends might not approve of this terminology, but I'll deal with that later.
Yeah.
Anyway.
The lines are heating up right now.
Anyway, but so many other religions, such as Buddhism, Hinduism, Judaism, to some extent Islam, to some extent, they just don't have that sort of pull.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if there is any difference between, say, the Reform congregations and like Chabad. I know that the Hasidic community in Grand Rapids is quite small.
Yes.
But do they have a really good showing on the Sabbath?
No.
They don't.
No.
Just as much as Temple Emmanuel.
Right.
Really?
Yeah. Of course, the people that are Harari, the ones with, you know, that are really the faithful, not just, because there's a lot of people that go to Chabad. That's the Orthodox in town. They would go all the time in morning and evening prayers and things like that. But no, there is that same sort of thing. Maybe we should do more carrots and sticks.
Well, you know, for instance, at the Sikh Gurdwara, you know, have you been to the Sikh Gurdwara?
No, I haven't.
Oh, I've got to get you over there. I've got some good friends in the Sikh community. They refer to their house of worship as a Gurdwara. And I know that because I've been to Ahavas Israel on Saturday mornings. Mm-hmm. And it's a 2.5 hour service, if I recall correctly. Mm-hmm. And there is some sort of refreshment afterwards.
Right.
I wouldn't call it a full meal, but often sweets. Is that
we called it onegs, the delight or the pleasantness of Sabbath. So we have a little reception, an oneg afterward.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. With a shot of whiskey often.
Of course.
Yes.
It's part of enjoying the Sabbath.
Anyway, at the Sikh Gurdwara, they meet on Sundays. Mm-hmm. And I think they meet on, I don't think Sunday is a special Sabbath for them. I think it's just makes sense.
Makes it easier in this time, in this nation probably.
Exactly. And, you know, the Buddhists meet on Sunday. The Hindus often meet on Sunday.
A lot of reform ages ago, I think until World War II, we're meeting on Sunday because it was a lot easier, too. And the reform were saying, fine, we'll meet on Sunday.
So sure, sure.
It's that immigrant experience.
Yes, exactly. Anyway, I bring up the Sikh community because they have what is called a langar, and it is incumbent upon a Sikh community to have a full meal after service, a full Indian meal.
Oh, wow.
Now, that's where you're going to get the Jews.
Is to feed them.
Feed them. Yeah. Feed them Indian.
Yeah.
a friend of mine was in Washington, D.C. He was with a Hindu advocacy organization. He says he was meeting with a senior staff member of a Jewish congresswoman, mm-hmm. and this senior staff member was also Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And so they were talking about different policy issues and all of this. And this one guy, again, he's an Indian Hindu, right? And he says, our goal as an organization is to convince you to replace Chinese restaurants with Indian restaurants as the place to go on Christmas.
Yeah, everybody's now going to our Chinese restaurants. We go and the theater. It was always a movie and Chinese on Christmas.
So, anyway, the my point is that there are certain pulls, and I think a lot of Christians have also decided to think more about things other than just the service itself, to bring people in.
At Temple Emmanuel, and it really, I don't think as much to bring people in as to really develop community, is we have wine and cheese for about a half an hour before our service, where people are really coming in and schmoozing with each other.
Mm.
And I think it's really added an extra closeness rather than just coming, doing your stuff and
heading out. Yes.
And heading out.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I do know that Christian Orthodox communities are also ones to have a meal as well. Yeah. Yeah. And the Hindus. So one thing that is, I'm not going to say it's unique to you, but it might be, or it might be just rare. And mm-hmm. that is that over the years you have affiliated yourself with both the most liberal congregation, which would mm-hmm. be Temple Emmanuel, and the most Orthodox, which would be Chabad House.
Mm-hmm. It's not rare in the Jewish community.
It isn't.
No.
Tell me about that.
You're Jewish. So there's different people that might also have a membership at both Temple Emmanuel and the conservative one, which is Ahavas.
Mm-hmm.
Because not really a denomination. It's you are you're Jewish. You know, it's a different way of practicing your faith. At one time, Reform, you would have hardly heard Hebrew at all. But now you hear, especially in the prayers, but there's readings that aren't. Do you know the more traditional ones like conservative or Orthodox is going to be mostly in Hebrew? The difference between what the conservative say, that there are things can be changed based on modernity. So, you know, you might find conservative people driving on the Sabbath. Although there's many conservative people that will still keep walking on the Sabbath.
Which would mean that you really have to make a significant effort to buy a home,
right,
or rent a home near the synagogue.
Exactly. So no, it's not unusual at all.
What is it about aligning yourself with both congregations? What do you get from one that you might not get from the other, and vice versa?
I really like the sense of community at Temple. I really honor the social action that they believe that an awful lot of what you're supposed to be doing is called the Tikkun Olam, and they interpret it as it's a different interpretations based on orthodoxy versus whatever, which it means to heal the world. And the Reform look at it as going and doing certain things. So you have seen Reform people from the Reform community really starting the hospice of Michigan. People, the Women's Health Center, we have a huge thing like that. I really like what they're saying, really looking at the essence of Judaism. But I also really love some of the traditionals. I love sometimes davening and wrapping myself in a talit. And at the same time,
I think there probably be one or two people who don't know those terms.
A talit is the prayer shawl.
Yes, and davening is the movement.
It's the movement and the prayer, you know. I also honor Chabad because they really have helped the immigrant community, the people who are down and out, a lot of the older people that are going around making sure they're fine for Sabbath. So it's their lives that, not their theology or the way they practice, but how they live their lives that I honor and make part of my life. And it's not to say that the Havas isn't there, but it's like, you know what? I can't be all places at all times.
I understand. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Common Threads here on WGVU. I'm Fred Stella. Len Robinson is my guest. Len is very active in the Jewish community. He's the former president of Temple Emmanuel, the Reform congregation here in town. And we're talking about not all things Jewish, but some things Jewish.
I had a full head of hair when I started. No. After a couple of years as a president, you know, no, you already knew me.
Yeah, that's true. You know, I got to tell you this. You know, I have a great relationship with the Jewish community. Uh-huh. I know right. So many people. I've been involved in Jewish theater. And I've gotten into conversations with people about Chabad House, mm-hmm. several people right. over the years. And it's fascinating in the Jewish community, fascinating when people talk about it, because so often when they talk about Chabad and the leadership there, mm-hmm. they kvetch. Mm-hmm. Okay? They will talk about how it is so not part of who they are. They don't get thrilled about women wearing wigs
and sitting in another part of the room and everything.
Yeah, exactly. If people are to wear Orthodox Jewish women often wear wigs the way Muslim mm-hmm. women may wear a hijab,
right?
Humongous families, no birth control, and just a variety of things, but. To a person, they always talk about some magnanimous gesture on the part of the people El Chabad house.
Exactly.
They'll talk about how they get visited in the hospital.
Yes.
Before anybody even knows they're there.
I know.
It's like the Rebbe's got a hotline to the
exactly.
doctors, right?
Exactly. I think so.
and how they'll take cooking classes there, or they'll send their kids there.
Exactly.
I'm just, you get in the conversation with one of these people, and you expect after the first 10 minutes that they want nothing to do with them. Then all of a sudden you find they do have something to do with them.
Welcome to the Jewish world.
It's not binary thinking, is it?
No, it isn't.
Can you comment on that?
Well, it fits me very much. I don't go on Sabbath because sometimes I'll go over there for morning minyan because it's guys getting together. I have a hard time worshiping when the women are behind a curtain. I don't dishonor them. I realized that, you get this feeling like, well, the women are second class. No, they're not. You know, mm-hmm. It's just a very much separate but equal.
Yes.
But it's not how I choose to live my life. But I honor the values they have. The fact that they will be, every so often, Rabbi will call me up, like when I was living in Ionia, and saying, there's somebody in prison. Can you go and see them? You know, almost everywhere you go around the world, there's a joke that, when we finally sent that thing to Pluto, they were welcomed by the Chabad house in Pluto. If you remember in Mumbai, when there was the terrorist, it was the hotel and the Chabad house in Mumbai, so that travelers throughout the whole world, Jewish travelers, can have a place where they can say their prayers, where they can have kosher food. And there's these emissaries throughout the entire world to take care of fellow Jews. And that means whether you're homeless or you need food or you just need companionship or whatever.
And I'm assuming to take on the garb of a Hasid, mm-hmm. that is to say, to grow the beard, to wear the black,
right.
and all of that. That is not a pressure that's put on people
no.
who go there.
No.
It's an individual decision.
Yeah. And as they explain it, there's a lot of rules and regulations they believe, but they're not pushing that on you. As you take it a step at a time, you come closer and closer to finding your Judaism.
Mm-hmm. I mentioned the Sikh community,
mm-hmm.
and that sounds to me very similar. The people who are the most extremely pious,
right.
Sikhs, the men will have a turban, and right. you will also find turbaned women, mm. although it's more rare.
Okay,
but you'll find the men with the turban who never cut their hair, and grow a beard. And follow certain more orthodox
right.
customs. But I also know Sikhs who look just like anybody else
yeah.
walking down the street, right. and they go to the Gurdwara, and to the best of my understanding, nobody's pressuring them. As long as your head is covered when you're in the Gurdwara, it doesn't
right.
have to be a turban. It could right. be a handkerchief.
Exactly. That's yeah. exactly how it would be with Chabad. If you went to Chabad, they would expect men to cover their hair. With women, you don't need, I shouldn't be speaking for them. I'm not sure if you need to have a scarf or not. I don't think so, but you'd have to have modest clothing.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Is there something, well, maybe it's Jewish theater.
Mm-hmm.
What, is there an event or something other than Israel that mm-hmm. really brings every Jew together in Grand Rapids?
No, and we're trying to work on that because we're too small of a community. It's having to grow immigration-wise, and here I probably, this is for the history majors, is that Temple Emmanuel was the older one, and it was Germans coming over and becoming Hausmann, Meyer May, all of these people that were help found Grand Rapids.
Mm-hmm.
So now here they are. It's the turn of the century, and these Russians come over, you know, poor, don't know how to do the right custom and things like that. And so you ended up with two almost very different communities. The Reform community, which was very much more assimilated, very German, very, you know, probably upper class, with these new immigrants. And now how do we bring community together? And I think, you know, through basically Jewish theater, through we have a film Jewish film festival, there is but we have a United Jewish School now, so that our religious schools,
your Sunday school,
are both congregations.
Mm-hmm.
So little by little, but we have different rules, you know. So that's you know, how kosher do you keep, you know?
Sure, sure. Yeah, people tend to forget that back in the early 20th century, ethnicity played such a huge part in how religion was expressed.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So what you're saying about the Germans and the Russians,
right?
I'm sure I could get a Catholic in here and talk about how St. Adalbert's was the Polish church,
mm-hmm.
Our Lady of Sorrows was the Italian church, et cetera, et cetera.
Yes.
And certainly you were welcome. I guess. I wasn't around. I guess that you were, anybody was welcome, although I do remember. It was through a play in Jewish theater that I did.
Okay.
I did a play, this is at least a decade ago. And in it,
when you were a teenager,
yeah, exactly. I played a mob guy. It was typecasting.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
and another mob type guy who was, you know, I played an Italian, and this other guy was Irish, and he was also mobbed up, and he says to me. He lamented the fact that we, meaning the Irish, no longer made the Italians worship in the basement of St. Patrick's Cathedral.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Okay. Now, yeah. I mean, I never looked that up.
Yeah.
I took it at face value. Well, it was in a play. Yeah. It had to be true. But that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
So we're coming down to the wire, Len, and I want to do what I did last week, which is to allow you some space to talk about Jewish theater.
Okay.
Last week, we talked about how you just closed Brill, and I saw the play, and it was brilliant.
Oh, thank you.
Sorry. I'm really, really sorry. No, it was such a great play for people such as myself. You know, I'm not sure how many people who are hearing us speak right now know that I'm an old disc jockey.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
So to be able to see a play about, and you know, here's the thing. I've been on different stations and done different formats. I've done a big band format,
Okay. And
I've done an oldies format. So I know the both musics.
You probably know some of the call letters she was talking about.
Oh, and the personalities.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, I did. There's one part where she just, it's almost like a litany of of great radio stations from the early 60s and or late 50s and some of the giant disc jockeys.
Yes.
It was a play about the transition in the Brill Building from a big band the big band songwriters transitioning into the rock and roll and pop.
And really going from selling sheet music to selling records.
Exactly. Yeah. So what do we have coming up in the future?
In January, we have Arena's Vow, which is a Polish Catholic woman who's a maid in a Nazi officer's house and hides Jews there. And it's based on a true story. And then later in the season, I think it's last of May, beginning of June, is about an arthritic, it's Seniors of the Sahara. They buy a bunch of little old ladies in a senior citizen's place go, I think it's to Israel or Egypt or someplace, get this little thing they get. And there's a genie trapped inside, but he's an old arthritic genie that now lives at the senior center. And it's absolutely for absolutely no other reason than to laugh.
Okay.
You're not going to get much history out of that or philosophy.
Okay. That's okay. That's okay. That sounds to me, I mean, looking at your season, mm-hmm. having Brill, then the one about the World War II,
mm-hmm.
and then this one with the genie.
We kind of do a balance.
Yeah, yeah. It sounds like a nice Jewish balance.
And you don't have to be Jewish to come to Jewish theater. And we keep having to mention that because people will go, I really wanted to see it, but I'm not Jewish. It's like, you know what? You go out for Chinese food.
Do the men pull their pants down at the door?
Check? Yeah, really. It's like you eat Chinese food. You eat Mexican food. You know, well, why Jewish theater? Read the history of theater in America.
Yeah. Well, and I may say that not only do you not have to be Jewish to attend Jewish theater, but I have been in casts where there were no Jews in the cast.
We're a small community here in Grand Rapids.
And I know you have people on the board.
Right. What it's meant to do is to show some Jewish stories written, but with a universal appeal.
Right. And I think the only comment, the only Jewish thread there, I'm guessing, are the playwrights.
Right.
The playwrights are Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
And
I don't know if this last playwright's Jewish, but it's about the Brill Building, which almost everybody in it is Jewish.
It's almost a synagogue. Right, right. Well, Len, it's been great to talk to you. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
I'm Fred Stella. You're listening to Common Threads here on WGVU. Len Robinson was my guest, and why don't you join us next week right here on WGVU.